Check out the Zona Plus. Air Force researchers found this effective, non-invasive, and drug-free treatment that uses isometric therapy, and clinical studies found more than a 10% drop in blood pressure for regular users of the Zona Plus. Check it out now online at OrderZona.com. That's OrderZona, Z-O-N-A.com, or call 800-936-9080. Use promo code USA2017, and you can save $50. Reduce your blood pressure the drug-free way with Zona Plus, and use promo code USA2017 to save $50. 1-800-936-9080 or online at OrderZona.com. Don't delay. Do it today.
President Trump is responding to what he sees as hysteria in the media regarding a conversation he had with Russian President Vladimir Putin on cybersecurity.
On Twitter, the president said the fact that he and Russian President Vladimir Putin talked about creating a cybersecurity unit doesn't mean he thinks it can happen. He added it can't, but a ceasefire can and did. Trump is referring to a Syrian ceasefire agreement that was brokered during a meeting with Putin on Friday. The idea of a cybersecurity relationship with Russia was criticized by several prominent Republicans.
Chicago police officers who are accused of taking part in a cover-up to protect the cop who shot and killed Laquan McDonald in 2014 set to be arraigned today. Detective David March and patrol officers Joseph Walsh and Thomas Gaffney are charged with conspiracy, obstruction of justice, and official misconduct. Special Prosecutor Patricia Brown says the trio lied about what happened during the incident involving the African-American victim in order to prevent criminal investigators from learning the truth. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Attention, all men. Did you know that bladder control problems are very common? If you or a loved one is suffering from male incontinence, please listen to this important message from Men's Liberty, because bladder control problems do not need to keep you from living an active life any longer.
Using Men's Liberty, we can go places and I don't feel a sense of anxiety.
Best of all, costs can be covered by Medicare or private insurance. Call 888-827-7549 to receive a free week's supply with your order. That's 888-827-7549. Call 888-827-7549.
A California system put in place to help fight wildfires is sending crews from San Diego all over the state. More from Jason Campidonia.
Several crews left Sunday to help battle the Alamo Fire in San Luis Obispo County. The fire has charred over 20,000 acres, and it's the largest of the 14 wildfires currently burning across California. Engines from fire departments in Poway, Chula Vista, and Coronado, as well as San Diego, will provide leadership, communications, and paramedic support. Officials say the statewide system sending San Diego fire crews out of town has benefited San Diego County in the past. I'm Jason Campidonia.
The Arizona senator, known for being a maverick when a Republican is in the White House, is coming out saying he doesn't think a health care bill is going to get done.
President Trump tweeted this morning that he, quote, cannot imagine that Congress would dare to leave Washington without a beautiful new health care bill fully approved and ready to go. Speaking to CBS Face the Nation, Senator John McCain isn't optimistic that a health care bill can get passed.
I fear that it's going to fail, and then we should convene a Republican conference. What are we going
to
do?
Lawmakers only have 3 weeks to go until heading home for another break in August.
Amazon has announced they're launching their own version of Best Buy's Geek Squad. The e-commerce company is hiring in-house gadget experts with the goal of helping customers set up their own smart home. Best Buy's Geek Squad for the past 15 years has offered installation and repairs. USA Radio News.
Weather this afternoon, partly sunny with a high near 85. Southwest wind around 13 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low around 68. Southwest wind around 6 miles per hour. Tuesday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly after 10 a.m. Some of the storms could produce gusty winds and heavy rain. Mostly cloudy with a high near 92, southwest wind around 8 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 50%. New rainfall amounts of less than a tenth of an inch, except higher amounts possible in thunderstorms. Tuesday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms mainly before 2 a.m. Mostly cloudy with a low around 69. Light and variable wind. Chance of precipitation is 40%. New rainfall amounts between a tenth and a quarter of an inch, except higher amounts possible in thunderstorms. Wednesday morning, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly after 8 a.m. Partly sunny with a high near 90. Northwest wind 3 to 5 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 40%. New rainfall amounts of less than a tenth of an inch, except higher amounts possible in thunderstorms.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County. Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Health Matters. This is NAMI's Hour. Compliments at Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, and Mental Health Matters is an award-winning show from the Governor's Committee on Stigmatism. NAMI has a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We have no office, no paid staff, and we work out of our houses, and I was told a lot of times that it's a good commute when you work out of your house because you can go from the kitchen to the family room without any traffic. What we try to do is we try to help folks who have either someone in their family who has a mental illness or someone they know or work with or next-door neighbor or whatever the case may be. And we do it in various ways. We do it through support groups. We have support groups once a month, and they're held in Flemington from 7 to 9, and they're at 52 East Main Street in Flemington. We also run a 12-week family-to-family class for anybody who has someone in their family or knows someone. It doesn't have to be blood. And we try to let the person who's taking the class realize what it's like to be someone with a mental health issue. We go over medications, side effects, what to say, what not to say in certain situations, what to do, what not to do. And we also have what they call a basics course, which is for families who have children under 18 who have a mental health issue. And that's usually about a 6 or 7 week course. All of what we do is free. The only thing you have to sign up for is the two courses, the basics and the family-to-family support group. You don't have to sign. You can just come. And all of them are, well, the family-to-family class and the support group is held in Flemington at the same address, 52 East Main Street. If you have a question or would like some more information, feel free to call us, 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. We don't man the phone 24/7, but we do have someone that checks at least twice a day, and we promise you we will get back to you. I can't help it. I'm sorry. My co-host just moved the mic, and it was like, you know, this roaring sound over my earphones there. But anyway, I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and my co-host is Tracy Ivey.
The mover.
Yeah, the mover and shaker. We're very privileged today to have with us Rocky Schwartz. Rocky is a wife, a mother of two adult boys, a member of NAMI, and an advocate of mental health parity laws and the New Jersey Parity Coalition. Priscilla and I have known Rocky quite a while. Priscilla's my wife, by the way. And it's so good to see you again. It really is. It's appreciated you coming.
Thank you, Larry.
And taking the time. I know you're very busy and, you know, with everything you're doing, so it's great that you take the time to come see us and talk with us. We want to start with, we all know there's a large amount of stigma attached to mental illness. And I just was wondering if you would speak to that issue from what your point of view, what you see and everything.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for inviting me here today, and also Tracy. Well, the stigma is so powerful that I think you've asked me to do this before, and I declined because for quite a while I did not want to talk openly about this. The challenge for me is that it's not just my story, it's my son's story. And even though I have a history, I'm in recovery from addiction for 35 years.
Good for you.
Thank you. That does not mean that I necessarily wanted to come out and talk about my son's story. Right. So the stigma, it's interesting, the other S word is shame. when this mental illness and substance abuse first happened in my family, which was in 2011, I felt ashamed. I was specifically asked by my son, don't tell anybody. If you run into anybody from school, tell them I have Lyme disease. So I was specifically told not to say anything. I felt guilt, felt that, you know, somehow, not that I caused it, but why didn't I see the signs? Why couldn't I intervene earlier? The what ifs, the what ifs, the what ifs.
Trust me, I think we all go through that.
I know, I know. So for a long, long time, I changed my whole routine so I wouldn't run into people.
Right.
I wouldn't go to the same ShopRite, and I wouldn't walk my dog through the neighborhood. I was trying to honor my son. I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't really understand it, frankly. So there's a tremendous amount of stigma, and I think the stigma, obviously I'm here today. So I have made a decision over the years that I have an obligation. Can't necessarily fix my son's, but I can try to change the system, because that's what I've realized is when I needed help 35 years ago, it was readily available, and my parents didn't have to take out a home equity loan.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I discovered how broken our system is and kind of entered this world. And now I welcome the opportunity to speak out about it. And my sons are proud of me now. They know that I do this.
Well, that's great. You know, and I think also that, you know, when I give presentations and talks and classes and stuff like that, I always say that if you had cancer or your loved one had diabetes, mm-hmm. or heart disease, there wouldn't be a stigma attached to it. Everybody be, oh, sorry, and bring you dinner over every night.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a mental health issue, which is an illness. Your brain is an organ. Your heart, your liver, your lungs, they all can get sick. So why can't your brain? Because that's an organ also. And they get sick, and people look at it like, oh, you're crazy. You may kill them, you know. And they don't want any part of you.
Exactly.
And ironically enough, I had Mary Jo Cody on radio here, Governor Cody's wife, mm-hmm. and ex-Governor Cody. He's no longer governor, obviously. But and she said the same thing. When she had breast cancer, everybody was, and their brother was calling and bringing food over and helping. When she wound up with postpartum depression, nobody called. Nobody came over, you know. And it's the same thing, you know. It's like the stigmatism attached to it, and it's sad. I know that it's not as bad as it used to be.
It's a lot better.
It's a lot better, but it's nowhere near where it should be. And, you know, I personally think that the more famous people that speak out about their mental illness, mm-hmm. the more public accepts the illness. You know, you have people like Demi Lovato.
Mm-hmm.
She talks at national conventions for NAMI and everything. Buzz Aldrin. He's a guy that walked on a moon, and he suffers from severe depression. Billy Joel. Dolly Parton. You know, I mean, look at all what she has done, you know, and all the people she's helped over the years. And Catherine Zeta-Jones is another one. And, you know, the list goes on and on and on. I mean, you could be here all day doing, you know, saying names. But I think that the more people like them who admit to the fact that they have it helps.
Absolutely.
You know, because they can look at, you know, people can look at them and say, you know, all right, I don't say everybody's going to be an astronaut and walk on the moon. But you can go on with your life. And it may not be what your parents, quote unquote, wanted for you when you were little growing up, but it can be your own life, and it can be a well-deserved life, and it can be something that, you know, that you have accomplished in spite of your illness. Because there's many people who go on to the college and go into jobs and et cetera who have a mental health issue, and, you know, they live with it and they deal with it. I'd happen to know a doctor in Long Island who's been on the radio with me a couple times, and she suffers from severe depression, and she's been hospitalized, but she's written books and she talks to her clients. And when she's talking to her clients, it's like us when we're talking to people, because we each have a child. All three of us in this room right now have a child who has, you know, had issues. And, you know, we're talking from experience. And she talks from experience because she suffered from depression. It still does, you know. So it's, you know, it's not like somebody that just, oh, yeah, well, you do this, this, and this. She's actually lived it, and we've actually lived it, so.
It is changing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's a saying among some of us moms that these are diseases and nobody brings casseroles to your house. But the more I've come out and talked about it, my neighbors and my friends and my loved ones do bring food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it is changing, so that's hopeful.
Yeah, it is hopeful.
I have to be willing to let them in.
Oh, yeah.
That's the other thing. I really kind of pushed people away for a while because of my own shame.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think there's a parallel here that we haven't really looked at, which is back in the, maybe in the 1950s or so, cancer was something no one talked about. And look at it now. And so what happened there that maybe isn't happening quickly enough with mental illness? I would say a lot more people got it. The American Cancer Society. Maybe there's some lessons there that we could look at, the way that is no longer a taboo subject. It used to be you didn't talk about a family member who had it.
Yeah. Everybody back then had an Aunt Isabel or Uncle Benny, and they had them up in a cabin somewhere, you know, by themselves and isolated, and nobody talked about them, you know. But I think that we have come a long way.
Yes.
Just nowhere near as far as we should.
Yeah.
You know, we still have a long way to go.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's sad, but it is, you know. And, you know, a lot of people who have a mental illness also have a co-occurring disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's drugs, alcohol, you know, whatever. You know, a lot of people do it to take the pain away. Or that they want to feel normal. Because their friends are going to the bar, you know, or their friends are doing marijuana or coke or whatever, so they want to feel normal and they do it too. I don't say it's right, but there is, you know, a reason behind it, and to them it's perfectly logical that they should do this this way. You know, to the rest of the world it isn't, but you know, they're looking at it from a different circumstance. You know, and I know that. We've been fortunate. My son never did alcohol or drugs, but I know a lot of families whose sons did, you know, or are still doing it.
Both of my sons have this issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the co-occurring, which they used to call dual diagnosis issue, is so much more of a challenge to treat. Kind of what came first, the chicken or the egg, right?
Right,
you know,
right.
Do you start using drugs because you're so uncomfortable in your own skin and so full of anxiety or depression? Or, you know, in my case, I was depressed for a while, but it was because of my alcoholism. And once I removed that, I wasn't depressed. But most specialists say that you need to be clean or abstinent from drugs or alcohol for a year before you can truly diagnose a person's psychiatric issues, because there's so much confusion. I mean, some of the drugs create psychosis, for example,
mm-hmm.
paranoia,
mm-hmm. Right.
Depression. So that's the real challenge. And still so many places, they claim they treat both, but even you call Carrier, and they say, you know, in the voice prompt, for an alcohol problem, click 1. For a mental health problem, click 2. Well, what if you have both going on? So we have a institutions that still look at them separately. The insurance companies still bill separately, and that drives a lot of decisions. So I know one of my sons, when he's clean and sober, his mental health is very, very stable.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you put that accelerant on, it just becomes very, very difficult to manage.
Right.
And there's a lot of stigma, even among professionals, regarding this. I've recently been searching for another psychiatrist for one of my sons, and two people refuse to see him because he also has addiction. They don't feel competent. One of them said, it's too complicated, I won't take those cases on anymore. Another psychiatrist that had treated him for 10 years refuses to see him anymore. So there's a lot of stigma. That just goes back to the other question.
But right.
Even in the professional community, there's a lot of stigma in particular about drug use still. And people are dying every day because of the opioid issue now.
That's true. For a couple of years, I used to work part-time after I retired for a few hours on Saturday at the medical center. And I used to give talks to the patients in their lockup ward, which was too central as a lockup ward. And I was giving a talk one day to men in there, and this young man comes up to me afterwards and he says, can I talk to you? I said, sure. So we went outside to a private area and we were talking. And he says, oh, let me show you something. He rolled up his sleeves on both his, and his shirt on both his arms. There wasn't a piece of skin from his wrist to his shoulders that wasn't cut. It didn't have scars on it. Mm. On both his arms. And I was shocked. I was like, and you both know me a while. I'm not at a loss for words often. Mm-hmm. I was like, my mouth just dropped. I didn't know what to say. And finally I says, well, let me ask you something. Why do you do that? He says, it takes the pain away. Mm-hmm. He says, the pain when I cut myself eliminates the pain that I'm feeling from my illness. I said, I didn't know what to say. And I feel like I'm not a professional, no, but I've been dealing with this for 20-some-odd years. I mean, you know, I should know what this is, but I didn't know what to say. And it's just, they do things like that so that they can take the pain away that they're feeling. And a lot of times it's because the drugs or the alcohol takes the pain away. You know, and I'm not saying I don't agree with it, don't get me wrong, but I can understand it, you know. And, you know, like I said, I don't agree, but I can understand it perfectly, you know, that they want to get rid of the pain. And that's one way of doing it.
Right. That's what they call self-medicating.
Right. They, you know, and it's crazy. Well, my son has schizophrenia. He's paranoid schizophrenic. And a lot of people with schizophrenia smoke. And people say, oh, well, they shouldn't. And I agree. My son shouldn't smoke. Nobody should smoke. I agree. Having quit 28 years ago, you know, I say you shouldn't smoke. I got a touch of emphysema from smoking. So I'm not saying it's healthy. But there's been surveys done by medical institutes. And it's proven fact that people with schizophrenia, if they smoke, the nicotine calms the voices in their head. And that's a proven fact.
Yeah. And it totally makes sense.
Right.
They would want to do it.
Sure. I mean, you know, my youngest son smokes. And I, you know, I would like to not see him smoke, yes. But if he's doing it for this reason, I can fully understand it. Like I said, I don't agree with it, but I can understand it. And I can accept it better than my wife can, because she's always after him to quit, you know. But, you know, it's sad. But it's sad that people have to do these things to get some sort of help that they need, you know, some sort of relief from the pain and the agony and the stigma, what have you. It just, you know, to me, it's just a shame. It really is, you know. Rocky, would you address the mental health parity laws? Because some of us may not all what that means, you know.
Very complicated subject.
That's why I'm asking you to explain it.
I'm a member of the New Jersey Parity Coalition, and we are a group, a grassroots group similar to NAMI, of people that are trying to get the mental health parity laws followed. So let me explain parity. Essentially, parity means on par or equal. So in 2008, a law under President Bush was passed that said a medical issue should be treated exactly the same as a substance abuse and mental health issue, sometimes called behavioral health, combined together. And that was passed in 2008. There were not a lot of laws in place to make sure that happened. Then when the Affordable Care Act was passed, one of the essential health benefits is that mental health and substance abuse has to be covered. So that was another way of beginning to ensure that the parity laws were followed. Am I getting too complicated?
No, not at all.
So, sounds wonderful, right?
Here comes the but.
First time one of my sons was hospitalized. We were new at this. We was at Carrier. We met with the doctors. It was after a suicide attempt, and they said, "Don't worry, your son is not ready to be released yet. There's, you know, substantial issues, and some of them are medical related to medication, so he will not be discharged. But maybe we should have your Visa card just in case." I thought, what? As of that day, our insurance decided he didn't need to be there anymore. And we had to pay $5,000 to keep him there another week until the doctors decided he was safe. So that was my introduction to this.
Wow.
Fast forward 6 years, two sons. Our family has spent over $300,000 out of pocket for medical care. Most recently, a year ago, one of my sons was involuntarily committed by a judge. It's not easy to meet that criteria. And thank you to NAMI, I was able to document and have everything prepared, so when he ended up in the ER, I was able to hand that off to the social workers.
Right.
We thought, for sure, here's a judge saying you have to go to treatment because you are not safe.
Mm-hmm.
After a week in Carrier, they were ready to let him go. But there's small moments where, especially someone who has a substance abuse issue, within a week, he was had more cognitively clear, and he was willing to go get some more help. These things don't get fixed in 5 days or 7 days.
Nope.
So the residential, meaning you need to be in treatment in a residential setting, this was a person who has had several overdoses, has been homeless, had been committed by a judge. The hospital wanted $37,000 for the first 30 days up front. And I swore I would never do it again. But he was near death. And they gave us a discount. And I figured certainly I'll be able to get the insurance to pay for it afterwards. I have lost 6 insurance appeals. I've always given up at this point, but I'm not giving up anymore because I've been going to the Parity Coalition. I've become a much more informed consumer, and I'm now taking it to the U.S. Department of Labor. They were shocked when they saw the court order and that the insurance wouldn't pay. So the Parity Coalition, sorry, that was a very long answer.
No, but, all right,
this is,
why does insurance companies like your insurance company not pay it? What was the excuse they gave?
They don't have to. They have not been forced to comply with the law that was passed in 2008. So that's why we have a Parity Coalition. In New Jersey, we have two work groups. We have a denied treatment work group, which is about 12 families who have been denied care. And we have an attorney representing us, and we're trying to get the New Jersey Attorney General to take on our case as a consumer fraud case. New York State did it and won. Three of the families, their loved one is dead. We have another working group that's a legislative group, and we're trying to get mental health parity laws passed in New Jersey. So there's currently no laws on the book that says you have to follow, you, Mr. Insurance Company, have to follow this parity law.
Even though there's the federal, it's a federal law.
Okay, it's a federal law.
Right.
So when you get your EOB, your explanation of benefit, explanation from the insurance, it will tell me, go to DOBI, which is the Department of Banking and Insurance, for any complaints.
I see.
Well, I am representative of 70% of New Jersey residents who has a self-funded plan, meaning my employer, it's typically large, across-state employers, that they self-fund the plan, and then they hire a Blue Cross, a Cigna, a Horizon to manage it. The New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance has no jurisdiction over those plans. So I've written to them, and they will write a letter back and say, sorry, not our problem.
So it's the catch-22.
So it's the U.S. Department of Labor that has jurisdictions. So you can imagine how complicated this is. And so we just try to get a law passed in New Jersey. That's part of what the Parity Coalition has been doing. I testified in a New Jersey Assembly committee with a couple of other moms and also a gentleman who works for Patrick Kennedy, who's a remarkable resident of New Jersey who's also been helping us a lot. So the Assembly overwhelmingly passed the law June 8th. And all we're trying to do is to get the Department of Banking and Insurance to track consumer complaints and essentially start to keep a record. We can't prove that there's parity violations unless the insurance companies become more transparent. But guess what? I was supposed to testify in the Senate Commerce Committee in New Jersey 3 weeks ago. The insurance lobby found out it got passed in the Assembly, and they convinced a senator to take it off the calendar. It's considered a lame duck. Now we have a governor's election. Nobody's doing anything. So why are they getting away with it? Because nobody's requiring them. And meanwhile, families are going bankrupt. You know how I found out about NAMI? I don't know if you remember this, Larry. My financial planner.
Right, that's right. I do remember. Yes, now that you mention it,
I do remember. So I've gone up and down Main Street here and given out brochures about NAMI to the financial planners because that's the person who we had to call and say, we need money because we need to save our son's life. So people are becoming bankrupt. When one of my sons is put in the hospital, frankly, that's a time where it should be respite. I should be able to get a chance to get some rest, right? Instead, I have to go into full-blown advocate mode and start making phone calls and fighting because I have to prepare for he's going to get discharged. against medical advice because the insurance will say they need a lower level of care. They will need a lower level of care, but there happens to not be a spot available at Huntington Medical Center. And the doctors will say, well, we can't let them out yet. And the insurance says, too bad. And guess who gets to care for them?
Yeah.
The exhausted, depressed, stigmatized mom and dad. So
yeah.
I don't know if I'm starting to sound a little enraged.
No, you know.
But it is not fair.
And you know what's to me is quite, well, a lot of the places you mentioned, Carrier, Princeton House, et cetera, and I don't want to go into a lot more of Summit Hospital, they're all private.
Mm-hmm.
Private don't have to keep them.
Exactly.
They can release them after 5 days, 6 days, 7 days. If they have no place to go, they can put them on a street, because I've seen it happen. I know people who have their loved one released from there and put on the street.
Mm-hmm.
They give them a cab to come up here to Flemington.
And drop them off at the hospital.
And drop them off at the hospital. Mm-hmm. And the hospital wouldn't take them because there was nothing that they could do. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying the hospital was right or wrong. It's just that there was nothing they could do for them. Or they didn't he didn't stay there because of this particular individual didn't stay there, and he walked all the way to Lambertville and sat on the river, and that's where they found him, on the river. Whereas at a state hospital, they can't release them if they have no place to go. Now, we know that for a fact because my son was in a state hospital for almost 3 years. And, you know, they kept asking us every week, why don't you take your son home, take your son home, take your son home. And we had no, because it was not the place for him to come. And they had to keep him.
But people think because if they have private insurance that they would get better care. And isn't that a shock?
Yeah.
Right?
It's amazing. But they're, like I said, they're all private, owned, quote-unquote hospitals. And they don't have to keep them.
And even if it is better, for argument's sake, for a week of better, if it's not enough, then it doesn't matter.
It's not enough time to manage medication, for example.
Right.
I mean, if they need to change meds, you know, a lot of these psychiatric meds, you can't just stop. You have to be weaned.
Exactly.
You need to be, I cannot believe that the insurance companies actually think that I am a nurse and could be able to monitor someone's medication. I mean, there's so many risks of that, but that's essentially what happens.
Yeah, and a lot of times they weaning somebody off, it takes 1 to 2 weeks just to wean them off.
Sure, right.
And then if they put them on a new one, it may take a month, 6 weeks, 8 weeks for it to take effect.
Right.
So
but this is getting a lot of attention, this issue, this parity issue. CBS News recently did a story on my family. I was invited by Patrick Kennedy to speak about this in Washington in January. There's a lot of attention being paid to it, but there are so many major issues with the healthcare crisis that it's being overshadowed. And it's just not a very sexy topic. I mean,
no, and
my dog gets more likes on Facebook than when I talk about
parity.
Right. But when it hits you at home.
And, you know, the politicians, let's face it, I'm not saying that they're on the take, but insurance companies have a influence, so to speak.
The insurance lobby is very strong.
Right.
Very strong.
They have a, quote-unquote, influence over them. So,
but this whole situation is going to get even worse if we get our Medicaid cut. I mean, we think our emergency rooms are, I don't want to get all political here, but it is really frightening. And I'm also on the New Jersey Behavioral Health Planning Council. And we meet once a month in Trenton, and we review, Wednesday we have a meeting. We're going to review the block grant application. We review all the grants that come from the federal government to the state, and there are some major, major concerns about what is going to happen to our most disenfranchised population. It's really, really scary.
Right, and a lot of organizations are facing mega problems with FIFA service. You know, and they're not, some of them are just closing and they're not staying open as for that area of their thing. And that's just sad. You know, you got all these people that need help and good organizations because they cut their funding, number one, and after they cut their funding, then they put FIFA, you know, service, and they can't afford to do it.
Yeah, it's a real problem.
It is.
I'm really afraid. I try not to be too negative, but I do think about this a lot because in a year and a half, one of my sons is not going to be able to be on our insurance anymore. You know, I fear for people like my sons, you know, that I don't know what's going to happen. I fear that the homeless population is going to get worse. But there's a lot of people who care, and there's a lot of people who really are trying to make a difference. So I remain hopeful. And I'm not going to be quiet.
No. Is the insurance lobby in New Jersey particularly strong compared to other states?
I don't know, actually, because, you know, I've only done the advocacy work in New Jersey.
Well, I know there are some organizations that will offer insurance to members, but if you live in New Jersey, you're not eligible. And so it seems as though there's a lobby there that's blocking.
I mean, I suspect it's strong everywhere. It's the other side, the enforcement side, that's an issue. So New York State is light years ahead of us. Their attorney general filed suit against all the major insurance company and won millions of dollars in reparations for families who had paid out of pocket for residential care, for eating disorders, and for addiction, and for, you know, a lot of these issues that take more than a week. And as a result of that, they now have a lot more support for residents in New York State to reach out to. How do I advocate? How do I appeal? The New York Attorney General's office has offered staff to our Attorney General to help with our cause. But nobody in the New Jersey Attorney General's office has made a decision whether to take this on. And we've now been told with the there's summer recess and the election that it's going to be dropped. So it's an enforcement. You know, the lobby can be as powerful as it needs to be. But if you have people that are willing to say, you know, the 12 or 15 families that are part of our Parity Coalition Denied Treatment Group, we have all submitted hundreds and hundreds of pages of proof that an insurance company stated that they would pay for certain services. So they're looking at it as a consumer fraud issue that they say they're going to pay for it. There's a federal law that says they're supposed to pay for it, and then proof that they did not. So we need someone to be willing to enforce it.
I wonder why New York has done so much.
I wonder.
So is Massachusetts and so is California.
Right.
Yeah.
But why and not New Jersey, who is neck and neck with New York, you know.
Probably a lot of reasons why that I don't even understand, but I'm sure politics.
Oh, I'm sure politics has a lot to do with it, you know, obviously, but it's just sad to think that, you know, if the Attorney General in New York can get this much accomplished and we can't even get half of that done, something's wrong, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but it's, you know, it definitely is. When you look at all the families that's affected, you know, they were saying 1 in 5. Now they're saying 1 in 4 people are affected by mental illness. And you figure that's 25% of your population.
Right.
And that's not just in New Jersey, that's worldwide. So let's just say the United States. Look at all those people that are affected
but
and get no help.
the stigma that you asked me about earlier contributes to this. Because unless we speak out that this is happening, the people that are in a position of power can't do anything about it. So I do feel hopeful that the Parity Coalition, we are becoming more and more organized. It's just like NAMI. You get a group of like-minded people together that come from a passionate place. And we have some lobbyists from the Mental Health Association, from National Council on Alcohol and Drug Dependence, from Patrick Kennedy's organization. So we have people that come to the table that help, that already know how this process works. I feel hopeful that it's going to change. But the stigma contributes to that.
But I think the media, you know, you mentioned that CBS News had done a story about your family. I think that would help a lot, too. More media coverage of personal stories, because people relate to that. And I don't know whether this attorney general in New York had a relative who was affected, but I'm wondering if maybe there was a personal connection for...
I don't know. But, you know, I've been asked a lot to talk about this.
Yeah.
And I refused for a couple of years because I didn't want to talk about it because of the stigma.
Right.
So how many other mothers are out there?
And it's not, when you say the stigma, I think you're on some levels you might be thinking by speaking out you're going to hurt your child's chance of, you know, getting a job or succeeding or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's very real.
It's very
fear.
Real.
Yeah.
Very real, and everybody, I honor everyone's journey because it's a very, very difficult line to walk on, to try to advocate and care for someone that you love and yet try to protect them.
Exactly. Sure.
And, you know, it's not only mothers.
Fathers, Larry. Yes.
I wouldn't talk about my son's illness to anyone for the first 6 years.
Well, do you remember what you said to my husband the first time you met? You probably don't remember.
I honestly don't. No, I remember your husband. I remember your husband, but I don't remember what
so,
I said to him.
I am very, very grateful for my husband because I think that's why I'm still as sane as I am today, because we really partnered together about this. But he would not talk about it for a long time. And I dragged him along to a New Jersey NAMI convention.
Well, I remember meeting him there, right.
And he sat next to you, and you said to him, not only were my wife and I not on the same page, we weren't even reading the same book.
That's right. That's true. But that's
and
very
that was
true.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Because it is different. I mean, there's a lot more pride and ego involved.
You know.
It's very difficult.
People would say, how's the family? And I'd go, oh, Paul's doing great. Scott's doing this. Sherry's doing that. And I have four kids. Mm-hmm. Okay? And I would never say anything about the last, you know, the youngest one. And Priscilla would want to talk about it while Mark was in the hospital. And I would go in the other room and read a book, or I'd go down in the car to the truck stop and get coffee. I wouldn't talk about it. And this went on for about 6 years. And I just wouldn't. You know, I would have done anything short of murder to help him, my son, but I didn't want to talk about it, you know.
So when did the light switch go off? What made you change your approach?
My wife finally drugged me, literally almost bound and gagged me and drugged me to IFSS, it's Intensive Family Support Services. Right. And there was a lady there at the time, she's long since retired, but she helped me get through it and how to deal with it. And I think everybody has to do it in their own way, their own, whatever works for them, however they do it. And mine was a little morbid, but I pictured in my head, I had a son, and he died. And I pictured him in a coffin in my mind. And now I have another son, and that son has paranoid schizophrenia. And I have to help him, and I have to talk about it, and deal with it, and help him get as far as along in life as they can. And that's what changed. That's how that was my way of doing it. She didn't tell me how to do it that way. She just said, whatever works for you, you know, whether you imagine something or you do something or whatever that works. And that worked for me. And after that, I talk about it. And after that, I started teaching classes and doing presentations and running support groups and all that good happy stuff. So, you know.
You change a lot of people's lives.
I think NAMI does, not me personally,
well,
but I think
no, you personally, Larry.
I think NAMI does. I mean, because it's just, you know, a matter of, you know, trying to help people, and that's what it's all about. You know, I just, you know, they wouldn't. NAMI has asked me not to ever go to Trenton and talk to the politicians because I'd sent mental health back about 100 years. Because I'm sorry, politicians and I just don't hit it off too well. Because
you might get carried out of the room.
Yeah, I might get arrested out of the room, you know, in handcuffs.
But I'll do that part for you.
Yeah, you can do that part for me.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, you do that part because I just, you know, I mean, here they are and, you know, they don't do anything about three-quarters of the population. So I just, you know, get very upset with it. So, and they said, please, don't come down to Trenton and talk when NAMI goes down there, please. And I said, all right, I won't do it now, you know. So I never have. But it's just, it's great that we have people like you that go down, you know, and do it.
You know. I've never done anything like this in my life.
Well, none of us have. None of us have.
I had no idea. I mean, I've been to Washington 3 times since January now.
Yeah.
I mean, I just had no idea that I would do
that. So this is all within the last year that you've become this active?
2 years.
Two years.
But actually, probably in the last 6 months, I've become just a lot more active in terms of talking with politicians and understanding. And it's because of digging into this parity law. And probably getting closer to no longer to have loved ones on my private insurance and really starting to be concerned about what is going to be available to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, in our last few minutes, we should talk a little bit. I would like to talk a little bit about what the average citizen can do to help the cause and what more about the New Jersey Parity Coalition and what kind of help it needs.
Well, we just started 2 months ago. We've had 2 meetings now. NCAD, which is the National Council on Alcohol and Drug Dependence, also has county affiliates like NAMI. So we just started one in Hunterdon County, which we didn't have. We're hopefully going to get some people trained to learn how to speak to a legislative group, end with the ask, tell your story in 90 seconds, that kind of thing.
Right.
And to have a group of people that we can reach out to and say, oh, this is coming up for a vote, we need some phone calls or we need letters. So if someone says, call a governor, call your local assemblyman, call Congressman Lance, who's in our district, it really matters. It really, really matters. To get these laws passed, the more phone calls that are made, it takes 60 seconds out of my day. But it makes a difference. And if every person calls, so our mental health parity law in New Jersey, I guess we have a meeting again tomorrow. I guess we're going to have to start from scratch. I'm not sure. When something, this is pretty new to me. So when a bill becomes a lame duck and then there's a new governor coming in, I'm not sure what that means. But when the time is right, I put on Facebook, this is the bill number, call your local person. You know, make the phone calls, send the emails. If someone has a loved one who's in a rehab or in any kind of treatment, ask if they need help. I mean, to file appeals can be thousands of pages of paperwork. I mean, there's copies that need to be made. There's letters that need to be written. If you have good organizational skills, offer to help somebody. I mean, I'm trying to figure out now how I can somehow do that, how to teach people how to do appeals. But making copies would help, seriously. Doing research, trying to figure out, based on your insurance plan, who the heck is it that you have to send the letter
right
to?
Right.
Sit with the person while you're on hold for 2 hours and have a cup of coffee with them. I mean, that's stuff, that really makes a difference. Anything that makes you feel less alone when you're going through this is a comfort.
I know that the NAMI Coalition or something like that for health, they sent out an email.
Mm-hmm,
all right?
They did.
And it was enclosed as a letter to Senator so-and-so and Senator so-and-so. I forget their names. I picture them, but I can't think of their names. But and it said, all you have to do is just, you know, sign the bottom and email it to mm-hmm. them. And I think by doing it that way, they get a lot more people to do that than to, say, make a phone call.
Right.
I mean, not many people want to pick up the phone and call the senator, you know, because they won't get them anyway. They'll get some, you know.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I understand that. But the point is that they don't want to do it. Whereas if they get the email like we did, like I did, and everybody, a lot of other people did, you can just click on it and
right.
send
and
it off.
With technology now, sometimes you just sure. got to put your zip code in, and it'll tell you who your representative
right.
is.
Right. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Right.
But right. that email counts.
Right.
Keep track of everything.
That's right. That's right. Does the New Jersey Parity Coalition have a website or anything like that?
We do not have a website,
okay.
actually. Good question. But we have a denied treatment Facebook page.
Okay.
So we are trying to collect more stories from people in New Jersey who've had the insurance deny their loved ones care. So if they just go on and look on Facebook under Denied Treatment New Jersey, they'll find it. They
well,
can find me on Facebook. They can reach out to you and try to get to me. But we probably should have a website. I could bring that up tomorrow. We have
sure.
our Parity Coalition tomorrow, and we have the New
sure.
Jersey Behavioral Health Planning Council on Wednesday.
So
you're a very busy lady with all this. Amazing.
Rocky, we do appreciate it. I can't believe the time has flew by already. But it has. Just see how easy it was, and you were nervous.
I was nervous, but thank you. Thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Well, thank you for accepting it and coming on. Yes. We appreciate it. And say hello to your husband for me.
I will.
All right. You've been listening to Mental Health Matters. And remember, folks, mental health really does matter. And we won't be here next week. We will have a rerun. We're both going to be away. But we'll see you in 2 weeks at same time, same station.
Thanks, Rocky.
Thank you.
Morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good Morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's NJ.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist,